Hello, and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 577 for the 20th of September 2018. And on this show, we'll be covering World Superbikes work back from a 10-week break. It's round 10 of World Superbike Championship from the Algarve International Circuit in Portugal. And we'll also be covering round 10 of British Superbikes from Alton Park, where the showdown contenders start their final challenge for the title. So let's just cover some of the news that's happened over the last week. We've got some MotoGP and some World Superbike news. In MotoGP, it was announced that the current MV Augusto Reparto Corsa rider and former Moto2 rider, Jordi Torres, will be standing in for fellow Spaniard Tito Rabat at the Avinto Ducati MotoGP team at the upcoming Motoland Aragon MotoGP. His contract supposedly is for one race, but maybe could be extended to two. Continuing on from the fallout from the Misano round with Roman Fonate, he was summoned by the FIM to the FIM headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, supposedly to explain his actions. In a press release, the FIM president Vito Ippolito summoned Fonate to the FIM to hear his side of the story, potentially before considering further action against the Italian. In other news, we had Ayumi Sasaki, the Petronas Spirito Racing. He unfortunately will be missing the upcoming MotoGP at Aragon, having suffered a fracture to the radius and ulna in his left wrist after being caught up in a second lap incident at the San Marino Grand Prix. This is where we saw all those five riders go down at the final corner. So the Sky Racing team VR46 has confirmed its 2019 rider lineups for the Moto2 and Moto3 World Championships, and it's Nicola Boega who will be promoted into the Moto2 team in place of the MotoGP bound Francesco Bagnaia, and replacing Boega in the junior class will be Celestino Arjamos, who races for the VR46 Riders Academy currently in CEV in the Moto3. And in World Superbike, Chas Davis confirmed that will not be needing another operation following his training accident during the summer. He was riding some Supermoto, had a fall and damaged his collarbone. This was a collarbone that was already broken and had been plated. And although that there was apparently some damage to the plating, it sounds like going under the knife again is not really an option given the proximity of the Portuguese round, so that might be something we'll see put off for post-season. Other news coming from Ducati is that Alvaro Bautista and Chas Davis will form the Ducati World Superbike lineup for the 29 season, and they will be riding the all-new V4 Panigale. It's going to be exciting to see a new bike debuted for 2019. It'll be interesting to see how competitive they are with that bike from the start. Hopefully they have a fairly extensive winter testing program lined up so they can really hit the ground running, given the fact that they're up against Johnny Ray coming back on the Kawasaki. For them to have a competitive season, I think they're going to have to be on the pace pretty much from the first round. Okay, so World Superbikes were back after their 10-week summer vacation at Portimão in Portugal. Just a reminder of where things stood. Johnny Ray, obviously, way out in the lead. We did Chas Davis in second, 92 points behind in second, and Vandermark in third with Tom Sykes in fourth. Really, for this weekend, I'm not sure if we were going to really see anything that changed the championship standings to any degree. Johnny Ray, I think, is pretty much clearly going to wrap this up. He can't do this quite here at Portugal, but there's a fairly good chance, if he has good results here, that he could go on to take the title at the French Manicor round in 2 weeks' time. The one hope I did have was saying, let's just see some good, close, interesting racing. And when you look at qualifying, there was definitely somebody on pole who we're not used to seeing. Eugene Laverty took pole on the Milwaukee Aprilia. Johnny Ray, still impressive performance in second. And Salvatore, the other Aprilia, in third. So I don't know if this is just Aprilia, maybe with some previous testing at Portimao suiting the track, or a little bit of holiday testing and development with some new parts that they were able to bring, because it was great to see both of the Aprilias clearly with some improved pace and clearly up there at the front challenging. Malandri was in third, Salvatore in fourth, Vandermark on the Yamaha in fifth. Tom Sykes, Johnny Ray's teammate, qualified in sixth. Other names, Loris Baz, fairly decent performance in 7th. Alex Lowe's, unfortunately, struggling with his Yamaha around the Portimao track. He was back in 12th. Leon Camier, still a little bit sore back in 13th. We had Jake Gagnier. Jake Gagnier, unfortunately, had some sort of stomach flu or some food poisoning, so he definitely was feeling a little bit secondhand. And pulled the other Honda there in 15th. So Saturday afternoon was World Superbike Race 1. It was pretty much Johnny Ray straight into the lead from second place on the grid. Laverty, unfortunately, either from pole, his luck only lasted until turn 3 when Chavi Forrest, struggling to get his Ducati stopped, crashed into Laverty and taking them both out. So that was a pretty sad run to an impressive qualifying for Aprilia. By lap two, pretty much settled into the order for the race. We had Johnny Ray out in the lead with Malandri and Salvatore in third, Vandermark and Sykes with Davis. Pretty impressive, up into sixth considering he started 14th on the grid. But early on, Johnny Ray putting the hammer down, putting in another magisterial display of shock and awe as he just started to escape out of the front. Malandri and Salvatore were just about staying in touch, but they just couldn't quite match his pace and slowly started to slip back. An example of Johnny Ray's pace was by lap four, he got the tyres up to temperature and now he set a new circuit record, a 142.304, which beat Sykes' 2013 record by some 0.17 seconds. It's a shame to see that Laverty wasn't actually in the fight. Salvatore was doing pretty well, staying there in third for a majority of the race. It was Ray out in the lead with Malandri second, Salvatore in third, a bit of a gap back, and then Vandermark. Mid-race we had, unfortunately, Camier running wide, demonstrating that the bike was having some sort of tech issues, and that was obviously a forewarning, as in lap 10, Camier retired with technical issues. It was on to lap 11, and in turn 1, Salvatore, unfortunately still pushing hard to stay with Malandri, goes down, loses the front, takes him out of third. So that was pretty much it for the race. The finishing order was Johnny Ray, Malandri in second, Vandermark in third, Chaz Davis a creditable fourth considering his physical condition, Tom Sykes fifth, Alex Lowe's unfortunately didn't go much better in the race, he finished in 10th. So the results from race one set up the grid for race two on the Sunday. It was Chaz Davis on pole, Tom Sykes in second, Loris Baz, a front row start in third. It was Jordi Torres in fourth, Toprak Razgatioglu in fifth, and Michael Rinaldi in sixth. Johnny Ray starting back in ninth, alongside Malandri and Vandermark on the third row. Lap one, we had Davis and Sykes and Ray into the lead. So, you know, already on lap one, he's up to third. Malandri in fourth, Rinaldi, Vandermark and Razgatioglu in seventh. And you could see that Johnny Ray was so much quicker than Sykes. He's just looking for opportunities to pass. And they were both sticking with Davis, who wasn't able to get away even and capitalize on that pole start. By turn five, Johnny Ray's past Sykes, but Sykes is fighting back and is actually showing some form, not making it easy for Johnny Ray. Johnny's Ray is trying to find clean passes, trying to get past, but it's a pretty epic pass ultimately that that Johnny Ray pulls off at turn 13. It looks like he's going to go wide, but he holds it, is able to hold second, and now goes after Davis. Very quickly, you got Sykes now trying to fight a rear guard action against Malandri, and Ray is just off after Davies. Lap three, we've got Davies about half a second or so ahead of Ray, about a half a second gap, and then it's Sykes and Malandri. And I think realistically, it was watching Malandri get past Sykes, and then also watching Ray battling with Davies. He would come out the last corner trying to get that drive down the main start finish straight, trying to outbrake Davis. But Davis was such an incredible demon on the late brakes, and he was often able to hold off Johnny Ray. But ultimately, it was lap 11, and then Johnny Ray was able to slide past Davis after Davis ran slightly wide at turn 10, and then Ray is off. He just absolutely puts the hammer down and just starts reeling off those laps. So with Johnny Ray disappearing off into the distance, Davis now is trying to protect his second place from Malandri, and Vandermark is closing them both down pretty quickly. And unfortunately, lap 12, on turn 1, Malandri up the inside of Davis, both of them last minute braking, both go a little bit too fast and a little bit too wide, and Vandermark just slips through, clean as you like, straight into second place. So that was pretty much the finishing order for the race. Johnny Ray taking top spot, Michael Vandermark in second, Marco Malandri in third, Chaz Davis in fourth, and Tom Sykes in fifth. Salvatore was able to keep it going till the end in sixth. Eugene Laverty right behind him there in seventh. So a decent point finish there for both the Milwaukee Aprilias. Alex Lowe's unfortunately still struggling with the Yamaha, back down in 11th place, some 20 seconds behind the leaders. So definitely a weekend for him to forget. Hopefully they can figure out whatever the setup direction is that they took, where they've gone wrong, and hopefully they can be back on the pace for the French round upcoming at Manicourt. So leaving Portugal, we had Johnny Ray on 420 points, Chaz Davis on 304, Vandermark on 284, and Tom Sykes in 240. Again, I don't think this is really going to change in the remaining rounds very much the order of things. Johnny Ray will be looking for a very strong result at Manicourt in France to try and clinch his title for 2018. He did walk away from Portimao now with 6 race victories on the bounce. He'll be looking to see if he can add another 2 to that in France. We have France on the 28th or 30th of September. After that, they're off to Argentina, where it'll be interesting to see if they've actually finished that circuit by the time they turn up. That's the 12th to the 14th of October. Some of the pictures I just saw recently saw very much construction still underway there. I'm not even quite sure if you'd call that finishing touches quite yet. And then the last and final round will be at Qatar on the 25th to the 27th of October. Okay, so that's World Superbikes. Okay, so let's move on now to British Superbikes and round 10 this past weekend, which was at Alton Park. And unfortunately, and unusually, I think, for this year, I'd have to remember, a rather wet Alton Park. Dave?
Yeah, just a little bit. A slight change to what it was earlier in the year when we were there in May over the bank holiday weekend. But yes, it was damp, it was wet, it was breezy, it wasn't too chilly. But yeah, it wasn't the most ideal of circumstances for a British Superbike round, though.
I was trying to look back. Unfortunately, they don't really capture the weather easily, so I couldn't figure out if and when the last wet BSB race was.
Oh, that's it. Put me on the spot.
I'm just wondering, because I mean, like, you tend to stand out in it. So I just think if you could think back the last time you had a cold.
MotoGP.
Or diphtheria or something. Or whatever you get these days. I was kind of actually secretly happy in some respects to see the wet. I mean, obviously, you don't want too much water that you have a repeat of the MotoGP Silverstone, where they just can't run it because there are rivers, torrents running across the track.
Sure.
And at the same time, too, I always hate the, you know, those sort of sketchy conditions where it's like, you know, it's a little bit wet for slicks, but a little bit too dry for wets and everything.
So, well, we had those as well.
Because I thought this was a great opportunity to, you know, to shake up the field a little bit, and maybe some of those names that you don't typically see running at the front, but you know have got the skills, sort of, you know, put on a bit of a wet weather showcase.
Yeah, it really does help in that sense. Now, the rains came in about lunchtime on Saturday. I'm sure we had a wet qualifying on... Yeah, we did, because we had a Stock 1000 race. So we had a Stock 1000 race prior to the Superbikes. Did we? Do you know what? The whole weekend sort of flew by without any cause or alarm or anything. It's one of those where I'm sat back thinking, what actually happened over the weekend?
Well, I think from your point, you probably said, I remember the hospitality, there was some champagne, and then after that, I don't know, it's a bit of a blur, to be honest.
Not quite. Almost, but not quite. I remember being in a garage, and it's all a little bit hazy, and I remember... No, it's not quite as salubrious as that, although we do have a very good time, and we are really well looked after. Yeah, just at the back end of a rain shower for Q1, the track had just about started to dry at that point. So it was one of those, was it do or die? Do we try and do slicks? Do we do inters? Do we do full wets? But there was certainly a dry line starting to form, which made things an awful lot easier for the guys going out. Now, it made life easier for the guys going out, apart from Leon Haslam, who unfortunately didn't even get a lap in Q1. As unfortunately, he lost a cylinder on his LX10R, which put him out of the whole of QP. So there's drama right from the very start for Leon Haslam not actually being able to take part in qualifying. So automatically starts from the back of the grid for race one on the Sunday afternoon. It's a tough one. You know, he's not led a charmed life all season. He's been the epitome of consistency, and his JG Speedfit Kawasaki has been absolutely perfect all year. So for an engine to do this is disappointing. It's a mechanical thing. It's an engine at the end of the day, so anything can give way, obviously, at any given time. As hard a work as the crew do, you can't legislate for mechanical issues. So disappointment for Leon Haslam, and a difficult day ahead of him. Although in the year 2000, Neil Hodgson did it from the back of the grid on the INS Ducati in his battle with Chris Walker. So, you know, a win from the back of the grid at Alton Park is nothing new, but the pace of British Superbikes has upped a little bit since then. So the old, what was he on? He was on the 916, I think, back in 2000, something like that. And Chris Walker was on the GSXR 750. So it was, so what are they looking about? 160, 165 brake horsepower, something like that. And now we're edging well over the 200s, so.
Yeah, I think they're over 220. I mean, the standard road bikes with a pipe and a filter, I think you can get 200 out of those.
Yeah.
I saw that as well. And it was, Haslam was, you know, he was very sort of philosophical about it, didn't seem that bothered, didn't seem that rattled about it. I mean, of course, now with the, the showdown started, everyone having been bumped up with that 500 bonus, the podium points converted into points. I mean, he was sitting there with a pretty good, 45-point advantage over second place Jake Dixon. And I think, you know, it was those people who were like really looking a little bit more, concerned, I think, going through qualifying, because they know that a good spot for them is important. I mean, Jake's there in second. I think Josh Brooks and Bradley Ray now are on 5.19 inch each. They're only, 4 points behind Jake Dixon. Glenn Irwin there at 5.16, so he's only a few points behind. A little bit further back in six is Peter Hickman. So, you know, that sort of that middle group, you know, they're definitely fighting between themselves, and, you know, always with that potential that, you know, that something could happen to Liam and the JD Speedfit Kawasaki, and they just want to be prime place to capitalize on anything that goes wrong, because really that's the only chance they've got.
Absolutely, 100% that. When you look at his race consistency over the season, we had a look at that last week, and Jake Dixon has to take points off Leon Haslam however he does it, however he needs to, whether it's a mechanical for Leon, whether it's other riders trying to upset, which I kind of thought I saw that this weekend, that as we talk about the race, the other riders, they didn't make it easy for Leon Haslam at all. So anybody think that he's, you know, we said last week that, you know, he was riding sort of 98% there or thereabouts, which is still, you know, a Herculean effort of anybody's. You try and do 98% of anything, and it's still a Herculean effort to do. But he has that 2% within him. He needed all his guile and all his wits about him this weekend, obviously starting from the back of the grid. and also, you know, trying to pick his way past guys who were fighting for places and also fighting for jobs for next season as well. The British Superbike rumour mill is into absolute overdrive across social media, across Twitter and some of the Facebook forums at Motorcycle News, Bike Sport News and the such like. There's rumours of this, that and the other, whether it's Scott Redding coming, whether it's Tom Sykes that's coming. Is Josh Brooks jumping ship to another team? Jason O'Halloran has come out and said that... that he's looking to make a move to another team. It looks like Glenn Irwin, with all the talk at PBM, I'm thinking Glenn Irwin's out at PBM.
Well, maybe let's just talk about then, you know, what we do know right now. Definitely one of the elements that came out, I think, shortly after Silverstone was the future of Jake Dixon for next year, and for the fact that he won't be in the Superbike paddock, that he'll be moving to a ride in Moto2.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's been confirmed yet. There's nothing official come out in Motorcycle News. Ollie hasn't posted anything through Motorcycle News yet, or an announcement from British Superbikes. But listening to, when I got home on Sunday and then across Monday, watching the TV coverage back, listening to Matt Shakey, Jamie Whittam and James Hayden, they all are convinced that Jake Dixon is going to Moto2 for next season. Don't know where, don't know who with, but they were, you know, there were at some point during the live broadcast, they all kind of looked a little bit sheepish, thinking they've maybe gone a step too far. Obviously, through the weekend, Jake wasn't drawn on it at all. He was just focusing on his racing. And to claw the points back. So if he does leave, he leaves as British Superbike champion. But whatever happens, I think we will have a maiden champion this year. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, when you look around, there's little whispers that James Ellison might not be returning to America quite so soon, that he might have another crack at the season because he wouldn't want to go out on such a low. Which really is, it's not the James Ellison that we've come to know, finishing outside of the top 10 on a regular basis. So, you know, he's due another crack at things to go out on a bit more of a high.
And do you think he'll be with the Anvil tag next year?
I don't know. I don't know. If he is, I would suggest they need to change their suspension supplier, because for James at the moment, struggling to find grip with the unit that he's currently using, and throughout his career he's always favoured Ohlins. So if the Anvil Tag Yamaha team were happy to make the jump to Ohlins, then, you know, possibly he'll stay. Again, nothing confirmed. It's just what we're reading on social media forums. But there tends to occasionally be no smoke without fire. So all of this is rumour and conjecture. And it's good for sitting around the pub table, as we tend to do with Motopod. We're not particularly well placed to deal with facts at this point in time until they become official. So it's nice. The whole paddock's rife with rumours. There's all sorts going on, and it really is difficult to sort the wheat from the chaff. And most of the rumours are diversionary anyway.
Yeah, maybe some manager throwing in something there to muddy the waters a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, it's a difficult one to pin down at this point in time until the official word comes out. So if some buts and pots and pans and the such like, but it would be interesting. I mean, what's going to happen at Tyco BMW? Michael Laverty, Christian Eden, are they both going to stay? Is one going to move? I think we're heading for the busiest shake-up of BSB seats for a number of seasons. Whether Scott Redding comes in, whether Tom Sykes comes in, whether Josh Brooks moves from McCams, whether Jason O'Halloran moves from Honda BSB. I'd love to do a chart of the whys and wherefores and the possibilities of who could go where and why. And do you know what? It'd still be probably wrong.
I think that'd be a whole hour, 2 hour show. And yeah, exactly. At the end of it, we'd still be completely way off base.
We would. But it certainly does need a good shake up, I think. It's been pretty stable for a couple of seasons now.
One exciting little piece of BSB news that maybe kind of wasn't in place for Alton, but certainly will be for Assen, is that we'll have Josh Elliott stepping up to take on a second bike with OMG Racing alongside Gino Rea.
Absolutely, we will. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Unfortunately, we won't be there for Josh, but it is an extra race report for me to do this year because obviously Stock 1000 don't go over to Assen. It's just the British Championship series, Motostar, Supersport and British Superbikes. But this year they're also taking sidecars and the Ducati Tri-Options Cup as well. But Stock 6 and Stock 1000 unfortunately don't go to Assen. So there's an opportunity there for Josh to take on the OMG Racing Suzuki and to give Gino a little bit of support in the class as well. This particular superbike that Josh is riding belongs to one of the owners. So I hope he's not on a you bend it, you mend it kind of deal because or you bend it, you buy it. Because I'm sure Jules will be scratching down the back of the settee for that one if it comes off. But no, I'm looking forward to seeing what Josh can do on that. I'd like to see it as a dress rehearsal for next season for what he's done this year since joining the team. Nothing confirmed, just purely me thinking out loud and from a purely biased point of view. I'd love to see him in British Superbikes, and I think he would go well. He cameoed for Tyco BMW last year at Snetterton and acquitted himself well. So it's becoming about the right time for Josh to make that step now. And after what he's done with OMG Racing this year, I think he's put himself in the shop window nicely for that.
For sure. Well, let's talk about the qualifying. Unfortunately, one of the people we've already mentioned, Christian Iden, wasn't competing. He'd finally listened to reason and decided to sit out with his collarbone injury. Obviously, with the showdown decided and, you know, not that sense that there's anything particularly crucial in the offing, it was time for him after his incredible effort at Silverstone to sit back, heal up. And it was great to see him talking to James Whitten and Shaky Byrne in the paddock, just getting some of his feedback and input.
And like Shane Byrne, he's a natural with his comments. He was on the circuit commentary as well, and he's excellent to listen to, and he's a very, very funny guy too. So he adds a little bit extra to the commentary as well as the analysis side, as well as Shane Byrne does. Christian Iden's really, really good at the TV side, but I don't think he's quite ready for that just yet. But no, it was a shame to see him missing for that. There wasn't enough time for Tyco BMW to draft in a replacement rider. They weren't going to bring Keith Farmer in because he's fighting for the Stock 1000 Championship with Billy McConnell. So that would be a huge distraction for him when he needs to concentrate on what he's doing there. And I think it was almost at the 11th hour that Christian decided, within chatting to his surgeons and doctors and the guys at the circuit as well, that, you know what, just give it another week. You've got 3 weeks, another 2 weeks after this to Assen, come back fit at Assen and have a strong end to the season. So yeah, it was definitely the right decision, certainly. Another bit of news that we didn't quite pick up on, Luke Hedger, he departed from the Lloyd and Jones BMW team and was replaced by Chesham and Joe Francis for this round. Joe is an ex-British Supersport rider, British Motostar rider, Stock 6. He's been through a few of the British series, well-known in the paddock, really, really likeable guy and a super talent. Was due to ride the Qingdao MV at the start of the year. Unfortunately, after Alton Park last time out back in May, he parted company with the team for various reasons and ended up plying his trade even in the Asian Superbike Championship, Supersport Championship. So he's been riding over there and made a return this weekend. So good to see Joe back. And he quitted himself fairly well, finishing 19th in Q1. So first time ever on a superbike and lapping in under 1:40. He was.
Hey, turn up and qualify ahead of Leon Haslam. I mean, you're doing
absolutely.
Well.
To be fair, I could have cycled around and qualified, but I'd have been out. I'd have been outside of the 107% maximum time.
Yeah, but no, that's true. I mean, you know, you look back. Tom Nee, for example, there in 21st on the other Suzuki as well. I mean, there's a few other names. So to turn up on a bike you've not seen or ridden before, I think that's a pretty respectable showing.
Absolutely, I think so too. Mason Law riding injured, so he made it actually through into Q2, which was a real shot in the arm for him. But Joe was the best of the rest, ahead of Fraser Rogers, Tom Nee, as you said. And Sean Winfield and Aaron Zanotti at the back, and Leon Haslam at the very back. I think there was they were looking at changing his visor for a slightly stronger one, just so he could see the lights from back there. It's a long way back on three rows, so you know he's what is he? Eight? He's on the eighth row, and at Alton Park, that's quite a long way back. But as it turned out, he didn't quite start from the back, but we'll come to that on race day. As we look into Q2, it was a bit of a mismatch, which as we go back through the season, it's the guys that have been there or thereabouts a lot of the season, you know. So Michael Laverty, Gino Rea, Dan Linfoot, James Ellison, quite a decent showing from Dean Harrison returning to the British Superbike Series. I know he was at Silverstone as well, as I remember. He missed Cadwell, I think, for the Ulster, but then he came back at Silverstone and then he was at Alton Park. He seems to be getting the hang of the short circuits. It's not something that Dean Harrison's done before. I think he went straight into road racing, but he really seems to be getting the bug for the short circuit stuff. Michael Laverty is 13th place. Again, for Michael Laverty, a difficult weekend for him. Just can't seem to haul that BMW into the top five or six, where he really is more capable of, to give himself a better chance on race day. He was behind Jason O'Halloran, who in turn was behind Andy Irwin. So that rounded out Q2.
It is amazing how close and how competitive it is, you know, when you look through these qualifying times. But thinking about poor Danny Buchan, he really could have done with some help or some divine intervention on that Q3 lap. He had his bell rung pretty hard after a crash in that qualifying three.
Yeah, he could have done without crashing at Island Bend, that is a fact. I mean, that's a very, very fast place to crash at Alton Park, probably one of the fastest through the left-hander. I'm sure they said it was something like around about 160 miles an hour at that point. There is an awful lot of runoff, but at that speed, it's not an awful lot of runoff, really. As you look at it, if you were to walk across it, you think, there's plenty of room here. But as you
not at that speed.
But not at that speed, no. Everything gets an awful... Distances become an awful lot shorter. So, unfortunately, yeah, Danny, he managed to put a time in at 1:35.8, but unfortunately, any further progress was curtailed at Island Bend. Taron McKenzie, he posted the eighth fastest time. Bradley Ray was out qualified by Richard Cooper, which is unusual since Brad finally got to grips again with the build based Suzuki. Glenn Irwin, I'm not too sure what's going on with Glenn. He's been out qualified by the Moto Rapido Ducati, which obviously won't please team boss Paul Bird. Josh Brooks in fourth, Luke Mossy flying the flag for JG Speedfit Kawasaki in a little bit of a renaissance for the season for Luke Mossy after he crashed out of race two at Silverstone last weekend. Tommy Bridewell qualifying second place. Excellent ride for Tommy Bridewell. Was not really out of the top handful of places all weekend. Alton Park is a circuit he traditionally goes very, very well at. If memory serves me correctly, I'm sure he got Martin Halsall's either first race win or first podium there a few years ago. So it's definitely a circuit he favours, along with Cadwell Park, but a fantastic shot in the arm for Moto Rapido Ducati, Steve Wolf Moore's team, one of the best run privateer teams you'll find across BSB. They're all fantastically run, but Wolf's team, they are the top of that band for me, along with the RAF regular and reserves Kawasaki team, who ended up on pole position with Jake Dixon.
Yeah, Jake Dixon, that was a pretty flying lap. He seemed to be definitely had a little bit more around Alton than most people. I mean, if you look at the qualifying time, he did a 1:33.7. You know, Tommy Bridewell there in second was a 1:34.157.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a 1:34.2, 1:34.2, 1:34.4, 1:34.5, 1:34.6. So, I mean, you know, Jake Dixon clearly really had the measure of the place and really did put in a flying lap to take pole position.
I do believe that was the fastest ever lap of Alton Park by a motorcycle. So congratulations to Jake Dixon for that one. And he was imperious this weekend. There's no two ways about it. I think even if Leon Haslam hadn't have started at the back of the grid for race one on the Sunday, I think he would still have had his handful trying to beat Jake Dixon this weekend. Racers often have weekends. Danny Buchan at Knock Hill earlier in the year with his double podium. Jake Dixon at Knock Hill last year, where just the planets aligned, everything worked, the bike was as sweet as a nut, and it didn't matter what he did, it went where he wanted, when he wanted it, and how he wanted it. And he was masterful to watch this weekend. The only difficult thing about the first race on Sunday was that it was wet.
It was very wet. In places, there were definitely some standing water. So it was clearly full wets throughout for everyone. And it was going to be, I think, a wet race throughout the duration. It wasn't one of these things where we might start to see a dry line appear. So there was some real concern, I think, especially for the people further down the field about how they were going to manage the spray. And obviously, a person who's having to take a lot of questions about that was Leon Haslam, starting right from the back.
Yeah, and I think his reply was, I'll pass 11 on the first lap and then I'll pick one off each lap after that.
That's right. That was his strategy, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was something. Was it 11 or is it 18? I can't remember what he said. Something like that. Anyway, yeah. But when you watch the onboards that the British Superbike put out on YouTube, yeah, he was pretty well settled into turn one. But yeah, it was very, very wet for the race. Well, unfortunately, the start was delayed. Glenn Irwin stalled his PBM Ducati on the line.
That was like such an English thing to have. It's like, can't start a race without a bit of a faff.
if it wasn't faff enough that it was siling it down with rains. There's a Lincolnshire saying for you. It was siling it down.
They did the sighting lap. They all lined up. And then Glenn had his hand up. Most people think it stalled, but I guess it had been missing or something. And he thought it was going to cut, but it somehow bounced back into life again. And then he was like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. But by that time, one of the marshals had said...
Oh, by that time, Olga had got hold of him.
Is that her name, Olga?
Olga, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was on them. She knew the rules. She said, nope, you got to go. I don't want to hear anything about it. You got to go. Causing a delay, off the grid.
Absolutely. And if you cause a delay to the start, because they brought the yellow flags out all the way down the right-hand side of the grid, as a caution. So yeah, if you cause the start to be delayed for anything, you're immediately started from the back of the grid on the restart. So it was a 2-lap warm up and then reduced to 16 laps due to obviously fuel of doing the sighting lap and then to go again on 2 warm up laps. So thankfully for Leon Haslam, he wasn't actually at the back of the grid. He had Glenn Irwin for company behind him. So that's one less person to pass on his way through the field, at least.
I mean, his premonition or his strategy seemed to quickly come into play, because he took a blinding line from the start, pretty much around the outside of the pack into turn one. I'm assuming kind of where there was some space, but there was probably a bit of good traction as well. And literally, he was up by up to mid-pack by halfway through lap one.
Yeah, he did a fantastic opening lap. P11 after the first lap. As Tommy Bridewell got away to lead from Jake Dixon. There's a lovely little scrap going on behind them. O'Halloran, Brad Ray, Josh Brooks and Michael Laverty, who'd made a decent start, were battling away between themselves, which was interesting to watch. Before, unfortunately, Josh Brooks crashed at turn one on the sixth lap. As the race unfolded, Haslam was picking them off one by one. You know, Brooks had laid down at turn one, so that was another one less that he didn't have to worry about.
Well, I think early on too, you could definitely see that Bridewell and Dixon just had a completely different pace to everybody else.
Absolutely.
I mean, I can't remember, but probably by about lap five, they were like 4 or 5 seconds ahead down the road.
Yeah, and with Tommy Bridewell having nothing to prove but pride, you know, as and a little bit as a title spoiler, you know, he's not a shrinking violet, is Tommy Bridewell. He doesn't matter. He doesn't care who he upsets.
And I think Dixon has smart. I mean, he knew he had the pace, but he seemed to just start off just that fraction slower, keep Bridewell in sight. But then after four or five laps, I think once he'd got a handle on what the grip was like and what the conditions were like, he seemed to pick up the pace a little bit and was able to close in on Bridewell.
Yeah, without a doubt. He was looking so controlled away out front. And unfortunately, Tommy Bridewell just couldn't lay a glove on him at that point. We had a little flurry of crashes and run-ons. Brad Ray ran on at Lodge, just missing Michael Laverty, but managed to keep it up. But you know, on his by dropping his right foot. So he ran on into Lodge, but he could rejoin. It's only if he crashes, as he did at Silverstone, that he can't rejoin. Luke Mossy crashed out at Shell. Never a pleasant place. That's usually a high side there. But he was relatively okay.
Did you see Bradley Ray almost went down at Lodge? Did you see that? He had that big moment, I think around about lap 10 or so. He had this huge lock on the front and almost dumped the bike as the front tucked, but he was able to just get the brake off just a split second in time and keep the bike upright. That was pretty impressive.
It was a good one. And he literally just missed Michael Laverty on that one. So at least the MLAV didn't get collected by him and his errant ways on his way into Lodge Corner. Always a great place to stand. There's a TV screen opposite. They have the grandstand across the way and the atmosphere down on Lodge Corner is really, really good. Leon went to third.
That was an impressive progress, wasn't it? After his mid-pack jump after that. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. He just methodically and progressively just picked them off sort of one by one by one. And
they didn't make it easy for him, moving closer and closer.
No, he had to work for it, no question. But he never seemed to settle.
Yeah, he knew he had the pace of the lead. I mean, what was his best lap was a 146.3 on the 16th, on his very last lap. He posted a 146.3, which is quicker than Bridewell, but not as quick as Andy Irwin, who did a 145.9. So, you know, his pace was that of the top four, certainly. So had he started at the right end of the grid, then, yeah, he would have been in the mix right from the beginning. Would he have won? Don't know. Difficult to say. But looking at his fastest lap time, Jake was the only man in the 145. Just as I look down, Jake was the only man in the 145s. He hit a 145.7 on lap 9.
Once he got to the front, he just kind of gradually disappeared. You know, Bridewell stayed with him for a while, but you know, you could just start to see him fall off the back. So I think at that point, Bridewell was just looking for, you know, pretty safe second. O'Halloran too looked pretty good for a third, but he just seemed to lose, I guess, some tires or something in those closing
laps. I don't know if he lost grip or what, but I was looking for Jason for the podium for that first race, but yeah, for whatever reason he got mugged by Michael Laverty on the last lap and also on certainly in the closing laps.
Andrew Irwin was able to get past him, and I think you're right, Laverty was able to get him literally on the last lap.
Andy Irwin, do you know, was stood in the OMG racing garage, because there's no point in standing outside and getting wet, because there's a garage there. Why am I going to stand and get wet? That sounds really bad, doesn't it? But it was just a warm-up and drier place to be.
After a while, though, like, how many races have you been to in your life where you've just kind of stood there and just got cold and wet? I mean, after a while, the novelty just kind of wears off.
It really does. And you don't dry out properly after that.
It's like getting too old for this.
We took advantage of the hospitality of Josh's team. So we watched the first race from the garage, and there was the TV footage on one screen and the timing screen behind us. And I was watching the timing screen more than I was the TV screen, watching Andy Irwin's split times. And he was going purple, green, 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 and then green, purple, green, green. He was the fastest man on track in the closing stages of that race. And usually when you see a green during a race in the later stages, it's normally followed by a race control message at the bottom saying that so-and-so has crashed at such a corner, rider okay.
Well, if you had been watching the TV, you would have seen he was trying. He had some pretty big twitches.
Oh, every time I looked across, he was out of shape. That bike gave him so many warnings, but he just carried on. And I said to the guy next to me, I said to Alex, I said, surely, how many warnings does he need? And absolute testament to Andy Irwin, his first race on a superbike in the wet. I stand to be corrected, but I'm sure it is. And none of them have traction control. None of them have anti-wheelie. It's a proper man sport in that respect, without all the rider aids. So to do it in the wet as well with standing water, and to be as quick as the guys around you. So for him to put in a 145, oh, he put in the 145.9. So he was only 0.2 slower than Jake Dixon's fastest lap. So really, that was a hell of a display from the young Northern Irishman. And again, it may well have been a step towards Paul Bird saying, actually, we might take you on again for next year. Jake Dixon, he took the flag 6 seconds ahead of Tommy Bridewell for a well-deserved second place for the West Countryman. Leon Haslam battled through to third, some 10 seconds behind Bridewell.
Doubtless no to the annoyance of Dixon, who must have thought when he started that race, oh, this is a great chance. I'm on pole. I got Haslam right at the back. Look at the conditions. You know, I'm going to bag myself some points here. And who does he find on the podium?
I would have thought anybody other than Leon and the form he's been on this year, I would have probably said yes. But I think he wasn't taking anything for granted this weekend. And I think he would have expected Leon to be on podium pace relatively quickly, which is, I think, why he made the bolt for the front. Because if he's at the front and he's far enough ahead, then Leon isn't going to catch him. And thankfully, he didn't. As a comparison, Glenn Irwin only finished 12th in that race. So his progress wasn't quite as meteoric as Leon Haslam's was. Michael Laverty, great result for him in fifth place. That's a real plus for him after a difficult season. As you said before, Jason O'Halloran, he faded to sixth place. Tyrone McKenzie in seventh.
Tyrone McKenzie's a decent finish again when your teammate doesn't bring home the bike.
That's right. He's outpointing him again, which, you know, it isn't great for Josh Brooks, but it's fantastic for Tara McKenzie, and I really hope he stays with the McCam Yamaha team for next season. Peter Hickman in 8th, James Ellison in 9th, Dan Linfoot in 10th, Brad Ray recovered to 11th place ahead of Glenn Irwin, Richard Cooper, Gino Rea, Fraser Rogers in the points for the Gearlink Kawasaki, just ahead of Joe Francis, an injured Mason Law, and Tom Neave bringing the Mavuno.com Household Racing Suzuki home for the final place.
Okay, so for race two, it brightened up. We had a bit of blue sky and some sunshine, and the track definitely did dry.
Oh, it did, yeah. It was brighter, it was warmer, there was a little breeze going on. It was a really nice sort of late summer's day by the end of it. It was probably the better part of the weekend, really, for race two. So it made for closer racing, or so we were hoping that it would make for closer racing. Certainly through the mid-top 10 it did. For the bulk of the race, but the opening, I mean, oh, sorry, the front row, Jake Dixon, Andy Irwin, and Michael Laverty, which is an unusual front row for the year, but one that was welcome nonetheless. As the lights went out, Jake Dixon he took a 1.4 second lead on the opening lap.
Yeah, Andrew Irwin did not get that Ducati off the line well. I think you'd mentioned this before, that Ducati is difficult to get off the line.
It is. Ducatis and the BMWs are quite difficult to shift off the line. The BMW in superbike spec may be not quite as difficult as it is in superstock spec. It's just notoriously difficult to launch. But once it's rolling, it's an incredible machine. But yeah, the Ducati is a difficult beast to get off the line. Shane Burns mentioned it numerous times. It's just how the bike works with the Motec electronics when it's actually made for Magneti Marelli. So it's something that they'll struggle to overcome fully, but they make the best of what they can. But that opening lap really from Jake Dixon was really stamped his authority on the race right from the get-go. Jason O'Halloran and Michael Laverty, they gave chase. Unfortunately, Tom Neave, he fell, which also, for the second race on the trot, it also tripped Gino Rea up. So he had to claw his way back from maybe 3 or 4 seconds behind Aaron Zanotti at the tail end of the field. So again, it was a race of attrition for Gino. Unfortunately, Michael Laverty, he went down on lap four, exiting Cascades, which is it's on camber, but it, as it straightens up onto the rollers, but he just got a twitch and he just seemed to be down on the curb a little bit. And as he got on the gas, the bike snapped and threw him off onto the grass onto the right-hand side.
Yeah, it was a pretty vicious crash. Like you say, the bike really did snap and spit him off. And it looked quite a fast crash. And for me, I was a bit concerned initially because I think he must have been fairly heavily winded. He looked to be literally on his sort of hands and knees crawling off the track across the grass to the marshals there.
It wasn't a nice one at all. But meanwhile, out front, it was Dixon all the way. O'Halloran, Haslam, Bridewell, Taron McKenzie and Luke Mossy, they were all together. They were all fighting for position, which every time mucked up Leon Haslam's ability to chase. Richard Cooper, he went down at Old Hall Corner on lap 10. Brad Ray did the same on lap 11, hotly pursued by Jason O'Halloran on lap 12. So an awful lot of action on Old Hall Corner, whether it was a little bit damp on the inside, whether they were on the curb, whether it just there was a slight patch that hadn't dried properly, I don't know. But unusual for three riders to go down on consecutive lap.
Yeah, I saw the O'Halloran one. He was definitely in a little bit fast and a little bit wide. And I think you're right. I think it was still a bit damp and you just saw the front just folds. Now, he seemed to end up in the same place as the other riders who went down. So my guess is that they all fell foul. Thank you. of the same conditions and just got caught out in the same way.
Very much so. Very much so. Now, we were watching from Lodge, both myself and Jen, an ex-racer friend of ours, Brad Howell, his girlfriend Sophie and our friend Reese. So we were all discussing what was going on. Brad could see things. He was looking, well, he's doing this, he's doing that. But we were watching, and I was watching the gap. We had a TV screen over the way, but I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't tell you what the numbers were. I could just see the colours and the pictures. So I was watching the point that Jake was at the apex of Lodge, at which point was Leon Haslam arriving. And as the race got into the dying stages, he was getting closer and closer and closer and closer. So much so that that Leon put his best lap in on lap 15. Jake put his best lap in on lap 2.
I saw this too. Yeah, like you say, that last 15, like, it, you know, I think at one point, I'm not sure if Haslam thought he was going to be able to bridge the gap, because initially when he got past O'Halloran, he didn't seem to really pull away. There was some period where you could start to see Dixon just coming back toward him.
Absolutely.
And that kind of just seemed to sort of spur him on, you know, that typical thing, like, you know, the hound's got a sniff of the fox, and, you know, that just seemed to push him on. So, but you get into really the dying lap. So I think by lap 15, it was down to about 2.5 seconds, but the gap was closing quick enough that I was really beginning to think that maybe Dixon's got some, you know, some issues, and not just tire issues. I wondered if there was some sort of mechanical issue.
He took Leon took 1.2 seconds out of Jake in two laps. Jake wasn't out of shape, but neither was Leon. And to watch them both, it really got quite intense towards the end, because you could see it on the TV screens, and there isn't a huge amount of track to see from the inside of Lodge Corner. But you do get quite close, and through Lodge, neither of them seem to have particular tyre troubles, especially trying to hook up the rear as they go down Deer's Leap and then back up to the start finish. And it's sort of off camber a little bit as you go over Deer's Leap. It sort of throws you out towards pit wall. Neither of them, seem to be really struggling for grip or looking out of shape. They just looked fast. And it was just, you know, to see the two guys at the top of the championship, like, as you say, the fox and the hound, it was fantastic to watch. So the closing stages was like, it doesn't matter too much to me who wins overall. Yes, I'd love to see Leon win it for Dave and for the team. But if Jake won it as a youth in the British Superbike Championship, then so be it. You know, I'm not disappointed. Both of them deserve it. Leon shades it for his consistency through the season, but if Jake keeps up the pressure and things change at Brands Hatch, then that's racing. But hopefully, as things go, it's going to be a hell of a finish to the season. Now, it wasn't enough. At the end of the race, as the flag came out, it just wasn't quite enough. Leon lost out by 1.1 seconds to Jake Dixon at that point. Tommy Bridewell coming home for a second podium of the weekend for the Moto Rapido Ducati. Again, a fantastic race for Taran McKenzie, who just snuck ahead of Josh Brooks in the closing stages to beat him by a tenth of a second. Again, Glenn Irwin, second Ducati home in sixth place. Luke Mossy finishing inside the top 10 after his issues at Silverstone the week before and in race one earlier that day. So good for him. Peter Hickman in eighth, Andrew Irwin in ninth, James Ellison 10th, Dan Linfoot 11th. So those two guys, similar positions to where they were in race one in the wet. Dean Harrison, a good 12th place for the Silicon Engineering Racing. And a big smile on my girlfriend's face for that, seeing Dean Harrison in the points. Ahead of Mason Law, Gino Rea recovering to 14th place, Fraser Rogers picking up the final point in 15th, Sean Winfield in 16th. So only 16 finishers in the dry, losing Joe Francis, Tom Neave, Laverty, Zanotti, Cooper, Ray and O'Halloran.
Yeah, and that was a shame that you know, Ray came away, unfortunately, with another did not finish. Good result, like you said, for Luke Mossy. You know, going back to that, sort of trying to build his confidence back up, you know, some good solid finishes that I think he can, you know, feel, because he was only sort of 8 seconds back from the first place there. So hopefully he will come away with a little bit more of a boost and confidence that, and a bit more of a sense of feel for him and the Kawasaki, which he can carry on into Assen the next round.
Yeah, that's when you look at the placings. Oh, seventh. You know, Luke Mossy was seventh. Peter Hickman was eighth. But there's 12 seconds between them.
Yeah, there was definitely, I think, there's the sort of the front runners, like you say, down to about Luke Mossy. And then there was like a second group. Peter Hickman was 20 seconds behind Andrew Irwin, you know, was only 2 seconds behind him. James Ellison was kind of there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
So it just got split somehow, you know, in the field in that. But yeah, it's a shame again for Bradley Ray. I think, you know, he would want to be, having got into the showdown, would be wanting to at least have some fairly solid points finishes.
Consistency. Any championship challenge requires consistency. So to crash and to finish at Silverstone, to crash and to finish at Alton Park, if he can get it out of the way this year, that would set him up nicely for next year. Brad, he's not daft. He's a smart kid. He's a clever racer. He will take on board what's happened this season and learn from that going forward into next season. It's his second year on the superbike, but it's his first year on a full factory superbike on the GSX R1000. Maybe he'll stay with them next season. Again, that remains to be seen as part of silly season. If he does, it's a bike he knows. He knows the setup. He knows the tracks now. He knows how to ride a superbike. And I think if he can put the consistency together of a Jake Dixon or a Leon Haslam, then he will be a force to be reckoned with next season. If we're losing Jake Dixon to Moto2, we are losing Leon Haslam to World Superbike. So the top two from the championship are going. For me, that blows things wide open as far as 2019 goes. If they bring, and these are all ifs and buts and pots and pans, as we said, if Scott Redding comes in, is he going to be challenging from the start? Is he going to be a John Hopkins? And when he came to Crescent and challenged Tommy Hill in 2011, sorry, Jen, she hates to be reminded of that. Or is he not quite going to hit the marks that he wants to? So there's always a risk of bringing in names. Sylvain Guintoli didn't do anywhere near what he was expected. Davide Giuliano, we all know what happened there. You know, he had an injury at Graham Hill Bend at Brands Hatch at the second round and never came back. So there is a little bit of a raised eyebrow, so that if you do bring guys in from other series that haven't raced our circuits before, which Scott Redding hasn't, bringing in Tom Sykes would be a challenge. Yes, it's a step back from the likes of Imola and Portimao, nice wide open circuits, to come back to Cadwell Park, Alton Park, to get your eye in for that respect. But when you look at what's coming next season, a few rider change arounds, a few team shake-ups, it could level the playing field a little bit. And I think that would be fantastic if we are losing Leon and Jake, just to mix things up and to push things forward for the championship, bring a bit of youth through. You know, the Mason Law will be in his second season if he stays in British Superbikes. Hopefully Gino Rea will continue, Fraser Rogers. You know, bringing the young guys through, Taron McKenzie will be in his second season. He'll be a challenger for me if he stays on the McCams Yamaha. So, if you know, Jason O'Halloran, Taron McKenzie, Bradley Ray, guys like that. And if James Ellison does stay and things go right, Josh Brooks should still be here, Glenn Irwin, Luke Mossy, Hickey. You know, if they're all tighter and closer together, we could already, I know we haven't finished 2018 yet, but we could be in for a really, really tight season in 2019. And that excites me already. However, we still have 2018 to go yet. So Leon Haslam, he leads the way on 604 points. Jake Dixon on 573. Closed the gap by 14 points over the weekend. Josh Brooks, Glenn Irwin, they're tied now on 530. 74 behind the guys ahead of them. For me, they're out of it. That's almost three race wins. It is now down to almost, to mathematically, a two-horse race. Yes, Brooks and Irwin could theoretically win if anything happens to the front two, but the law of averages says that that's not going to happen. So for me, Brooks and Irwin, I think, are out of the race now. Bradley Ray certainly is, and Peter Hickman, he is also. O'Halloran. Now, we do have the Riders' Cup, don't we? We spoke about this before.
And actually, that, in some respects, was the more interesting turnabout. Because if you look at it going in, where you had Danny Buck and Iden, at that point, they were the top two for the Riders' Trophy. But obviously, neither of them were able to compete in the surround. So Jason got quite a boon there with one decent finish. But Taron, with his two good finishes, did well. And Tommy Bridewell, obviously, with a 20-point and a 16-point as well. A nice, healthy boost.
He's brought himself into contention, hasn't he?
Yeah, for sure. He's only sort of 10 points back. If you look at Jason O'Halloran on 138, Tommy Bridewell's there on 128. You know, with his current run of form, that's completely possible and doable. Because don't forget, there's going to be the two rounds at Assen and then three rounds at Brands.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a tight one, the Riders' Cup. They still get a trophy for it, and they still get to go on the podium at Brands Hatch and get presented to it in front of the crowd that come down into pit lane. So it is still something to go on the shelf. Just to cover off the rest of the weekend, as we look at just a couple of the support classes, Stock 1000 seems to be going down into a real battle between Bill Bay Suzuki's Billy McConnell and Tyco BMW's Keith Farmer. McConnell took the first race on Saturday afternoon ahead of Farmer, but Farmer took the second race on the Sunday ahead of a seventh place Billy McConnell, which, with half a point going into Alton Park separating the two, Farmer's come out ahead by 10.5 points now. Into Supersport, Jack Kennedy, he leads Ben Curry by 30 points with four races left. That's two at Assen and two at Brands Hatch. Alistair Seeley on the EHA Yamaha, he was a little bit of a party pooper this weekend. He took race one from Kennedy before Curry beat Kennedy in race two. So the Supersport title isn't by any means resolved yet, and neither is the Stock 1000 one. Congratulations to Jake Archer, City Lifting in Motostar. He wrapped up the title this weekend, second title in 2 years for City Lifting after Tom Booth Amos lifted the championship last year. And Ryan Vickers, he took the Stock 600 championship this weekend. He was incredible this weekend, I have to say. Remember that name, Ryan Vickers. He was 1.7 seconds ahead of his nearest rival in qualifying. And again, put pay to Rory Skinner in the race. He is a talent, make no mistake. On the back of Moto Rapido, Tommy Bridewell and his excellent run for the weekend, young Thomas Strudwick in Motostar, in the standard class, he rides the Case Moto Rapido Moto 3 bike. He had an unfortunate, I can't remember what he did, if he pulled, I think he pulled out of the race in race one. He had a technical issue, which meant he started 30th on the grid. And he managed to fight his way through to 11th and third place in the standard class. And in that class, in that level of competition with guys around you, they're picking different lines. They're picking, you know, wherever you want to go, somebody's going to be there. I thought that was one of my standout races, standout rides of Sunday. The MotoStar guys don't get an awful lot of credit, but I thought young Strudwick's ride on Sunday was worthy of a little mention on Motopod. If I could just allow myself a couple of shout-outs, Brian at OMG Racing Suzuki, the osteopath there, we were stood at outside the garage over the weekend, and he came up next to me and he said, "I didn't realise you did Motopod." And it's one of those moments where you go, "Oh, shit. What have I said? What have I done? Have I done all right?" And a wonderful conversation with Brian. Lovely fella. So, Brian, thank you very much for listening. And also to Kev Pinder at IMR, Ian Moffat Racing, who invited us into the hospitality over the weekend just to see how Ian Moffat and the team run. They've come from road racing. And Ian, one of the youngest team managers or team owners, he's only 33. They have a hell of a setup. So thank you to Kev for organising that for us. I know it's a little bit of a self-indulgence to do, but no, it was great to meet the guys over the weekend. And it's nice to know that there's quite a growing handful of listeners in the British Superbike paddock. So guys, if you're listening, spread the word if you want to. Even if you don't want to, please spread the word. You know, more listeners would be great. More feedback would be great, whether it's from the fans, whether it's from within the paddock. We're trying to build the podcast even further under the guidance of Len, under the guidance of all the guys that do the podcast, whether they're on the state side or whether, like Andy and I, over in Europe. We're doing the best that we can, and we'd welcome your input. Make yourselves known to us if you want to, with good, bad or indifferent feedback. motopod@motopodcast.com. If there's anything the listeners, you would like to hear from us. We've been a bit lax on the interviews over the last sort of 18 months or so, but sort of guys that you maybe would like us to talk to, if we can get chance over the winter period at least. We've got a good amount of contacts that we can get numbers from. I'm finished at racing now until next season. Unfortunately, we're not going to make Assen or Brands Hatch. So I'm done at the race meetings for now. But I'm sure we'll be at the bike show I think that's the middle of November. So we'll be around and about.
Dave, thank you so much for taking some time out this evening to get us caught up on BSB. Really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure, as always.
Again, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.